Hey, podcast listeners. It's Grace Ferguson with the Common Thread Podcast, coming to you from the Howard Thurman Center for Common Ground at Boston University. Today's episode is about Ben Shapiro's upcoming speech here at BU. Shapiro is a conservative commentator and host of The Ben Shapiro Show, a nationally popular podcast. He's also the founder and editor of the conservative news site The Daily Wire. Shapiro is a controversial figure. His appearances on other college campuses have sparked student protests and university pushback. My guests today are two members of Young Americans for Freedom, or YAF as they often call themselves. YAF is the student group that invited Shapiro. Diana Soriano is the chair of the BU chapter, and Nick Dean is the chapter's vice chair. First, here's some background for this story. To get a venue for Shapiro, YAF had to work with the university. Their negotiations became public in mid-September when YAF released a report that got picked up by Shapiro's news site. The students had requested the 1,500-seat Metcalf Ballroom, but BU instead offered the 700-seat Morse Auditorium. BU also asked YAF to pay $12,720 in security fees. Not long after that report, BU agreed to cover the security costs. But it took another month to confirm the venue. Meanwhile, some students started an online petition to disinvite Shapiro. Its title is Racist Hatemonger Ben Shapiro Not Welcome at Boston University, and it has over 2,200 signatures as of this recording. A group calling themselves BU Students Against Hate Speech has held multiple demonstrations against Shapiro's visit. Shapiro's now set to speak on November 13th at BU's Track and Tennis Center. The event is sold out. With all that said, here's my interview with YAF members Diana Soriano and Nick Dean. Diana and Nick, welcome to the Common Thread Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks for having us.
So, what is Young Americans for Freedom?
We are the only explicitly conservative organization on campus. We believe in the free market. We believe in individual liberty. We're very against communism. I feel like those are like the main things.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Because the Young Americans for Freedom was founded back in the 60s by a group of prominent conservatives. And so the tenets have essentially remained the same until today. So very anti-socialist, anti-communist stances, strong on national defense, strong on U.S. sovereignty, and very pro-liberty and freedom.
And what do you guys do on campus?
We have weekly meetings, so we're very active. We actually just started up last year, so I'd say the biggest events were just having meetings every week, tabling to get members. We've grown our roster quite a bit. We have about 260 people on our roster, and our meetings are very well attended. Last year, we had Matt Walsh of The Daily Wire, which is Ben's publication, and now we're having Ben Shapiro, which is huge because he's the most requested conservative speaker in the nation, so we're super proud of that.
And what has your personal experience been as a conservative on a predominantly liberal campus in a liberal city?
I think we've done a couple interviews before this too, and like a lot of people ask us like, how is it like being so ostracized or whatever? We definitely are like a minority or whatever, and a lot of people don't like us, but we don't have like that victim mentality where we're like, oh my God, like we're such victims. Like we just don't feel that way. So sure, there are a lot of people who are vocal on like the really far left on the fringes, and they're very loud, so people think that that's like how everyone is. But most people are like, do what you want. And like we have like liberals who come to our meetings and like really appreciate how we welcome new ideas. I feel like people think that it's like an echo chamber because it's conservative, but it's really not at all. We have liberals, we have libertarians, conservatives, conservatarians.
Socialists.
We have socialists. Like, we disagree on like everything during our meetings, but people feel like it's like the only place where you can talk about things freely without like fear of people calling you things that aren't true. So like, I think that's an important thing to note.
So you have invited Ben Shapiro to come to campus. He's coming on November 13th. Why Ben Shapiro specifically?
Well, Ben is probably the most visible and most vocal conservative pundit that YAF as an organization has as a speaker. He's very influential to the Generation Z, our generation. He speaks to a lot of us. Many people know him from his YouTube videos, So Ben Shapiro, just I think we also think that he very clearly articulates a lot of conservative positions, mainstream conservative positions, and he's done that for years at this point. And so we really wanted to, you know, have something that maybe would spark a good debate or intellectual discussion, and we thought that he might be the one to do that for us.
Yeah, so as I said before, he is the most requested conservative speaker on college campuses, and for good reason. He's very logical, very smart guy, and he is, like, the embodiment of like, this conservatism of, like, the Gen Z and some millennials, which that conservatism basically says that people should be able to do whatever they want as long as they're not harming anyone else. At the same time, people are allowed to have personal beliefs, and the government shouldn't infringe on that. So he does a really good job with that. And he's actually stays very objective about things. Like on his podcast, he'll tell you like the facts from both sides and will stay so objective. And then he'll give you his opinion. He actually gets criticized for this on the right a lot for like being too fair and like not praising Trump every second. So it's just kind of funny how a lot of people on campus are saying that he's like not an honest guy, because that's honestly what we love about him so much.
So you've been in negotiations with the university for a while now. So when did that start?
It's been a really long, really long journey. So we sent BU the contracts to be signed in late June. They just got signed on Monday. October. What was Monday? October 25th?
Monday was 28th.
28th. October 28th is when we got the contract signed. It was sent to the school.
Finally.
It was sent to the school late June. And we were, like, negotiating with them that entire time. So that's how that went.
When you first asked to bring Ben Shapiro, what did you expect from the university?
We expected a little bit of pushback. Obviously, with these events, there's controversy, but it's not from our side, obviously, because there's always a lot of people who will not support him coming to campus, and so they might be deemed a security threat. So we thought the university would be probably going to have to request some security funds and then maybe a smaller venue size, so we expected the pushback, and the university did just that, and so we've been going back and forth, but obviously the contract's signed, and we have a good agreement with both parties now.
So I definitely knew it would be hard, but I didn't think it would be this hard. I didn't think that they would change the venue because there's a really competitive process to get Ben, and we had to like have all the details figured out beforehand. So I was actually working, the contracts were sent in late June, but I submitted the proposal to YAF in mid-May, and we heard back. So mid-May, I sent them a proposal of like how the event would go down, and I was meeting with student activities in May and April about like where we could have it, and the GSU is where they said that we can have it. So I did not expect like that's where they said it could be, because that was like the occupancy we needed and there was no issue, so I didn't think the venue was going to be changed at all. I didn't think the money would be an issue because YAF is paying for his speaking fee. So a lot of people are saying like, oh, people are the school is paying for him to come. No, YAF is paying every cent for him to come. What the school is paying for is the security. It's not our fault. It's the fault of leftist protesters who can't stand hearing another opinion.
So just to be clear, you expected pushback from the university. Why?
I think it's just good to be cautious about it because it happens. It happens on like, it's very notorious.
I mean, like, why did you expect the university to push back?
Well, Ben Shapiro's, he's gone around to a lot of campuses, and so there's been a lot of leftist pushback, and we do differentiate between liberals and leftists. Leftists are the people who actually get violent over politics, like Antifa, who have actually...
And want to shut things down,
who have rioted and caused damages to the universities that he's spoken at, specifically Berkeley. That's probably the most prominent example. So we expect the university to obviously want security and a possible venue size change, but I don't think we expected as much as we got, for sure.
And did you expect them to cover all of the security costs?
So there shouldn't be, this is the whole thing, we shouldn't have to pay for security. BUPD is supposed to be covered by student activities.
Yes.
Like, I have that in writing from student activities that BUPD is covered by the school. They're making it harder for us because of how much security was needed. But the thing is, it's the heckler's veto. Like, you can't, by giving us a huge fee like that, $30,000, as a base, by the way, they said it would increase.
Yeah.
They said it could potentially increase. By giving us a colossal fee like that on a student group, you're basically suppressing speech because you know we can't pay that. So it's the heckler's veto to suppress speech on the basis that there might be hecklers. Like, that we can't control.
Yeah, it's, again, it's not because we were going to be the ones that are possibly bringing violence to campus, so we should not be penalized for other people's actions which are not directly related to us. Also, free speech is not, the amount of free speech that you can get is not the amount of free speech that you can afford. That's not what free speech is.
Yeah, and they were, the school was bringing up, like, Antifa, like, even before there were threats, like, that's how good Antifa is. Like, they know that schools are scared of them because they are violent. They suppress, they want to shut things down, and, like, it's happened in the past in Boston, all over the country. There's so many stories about it. So they preemptively had the security, and, like, Antifa wins by, like, students know, conservatives know that if they want to have a big speaker, there's going to be a fee like that, so a lot of them won't even try. Because that, like, and that's completely unfair for Antifa to be our responsibility. Because they're not.
They're not us.
So I want to get an idea of what these negotiations sounded like and the course of the negotiations as you came to different agreements. Could you put me in that room or put me in that email chain?
This was over the course of, like, 5 months. So, like, do you want, like, a specific time or, like, just an overview of everything?
Why don't we start in September of this year when the Daily Wire came out with the story, straight out of the leftist playbook, Boston U cut Shapiro audience by half, imposes massive fee, and that's the headline.
Yeah, so over the summer, so the school knew that we were trying to have him in April, so they had plenty of time to, like, talk about what they were going to do. April, it's currently almost November. We got them the contracts in June, nothing. Like, they were basically stonewalling us for June, all of July, all of August, and then the school year coming, we wanted to announce it at Splash, and then that couldn't happen. And then when September came around, we were getting very angry and, like, felt really, it was really unfair how stonewalled we were getting.
And you were reaching out to the university at that time.
Yes, constantly. And they weren't, like, not answering. They were, like, slow to answer and, like, would be vague and be like, oh, I'll have to get back to you about this, and then it would be like 2 weeks, and then it's like, I have to get back to you about this again, and then it's another 2 weeks. So they were stonewalling because they didn't know what to do. But once it got to the point where we finally got, Dean Elmore and Dean Bettaglino called me, like, finally at the end of August, saying, basically trying to intimidate me out of having the event, saying, there's probably going to be a lot of security costs. I don't know if you want to go forward with this, but we, like, can if you want to. And I was like, of course I do. Let's see the quote. 2 weeks later, so they get the quote from BUPD, and I see that it's $13,000 as a base, and we were responsible for it. So that's when we were like, this is ridiculous. We're not taking this anymore. And that's when we just sent the email to YAF, and then Daily Wire made a story, YAF made a story, because it was ridiculous. And then the next day, they agreed to cover the fees.
Got it.
And I just want to be really clear, too, that, like, ever since then, the school has been really helpful.
Oh, the school has been nothing but helpful since then.
It's
been extremely commendable how much President Brown and his staff actually supports free speech and free thought and free expression on campus in a dialogue. We've been really impressed with that.
I also want to be clear that I think there's a misconception on campus that, like, the same people who gave us the security fee are the ones that, like, backed out. That's not what happened. It was actually just put into the hands of someone else. So we kind of assumed that the Dean of Students Office and Student Activities, like, okayed it with the President's Office that they were sending this, because, like, you would check in with the President's Office if you were sending something like that to a student. But apparently they didn't. So what happened with the publicity was that it got into the President's Office attention, and then President Brown right away said, cover it.
Yep.
So after he said he was going to cover the fee through the university, then the date and location was finally announced on October 24th. So that's a month later. Do you know why that took so long to finally hammer down the details?
Yeah, so that was, like, our next big struggle. Mm-hmm. BUPD was still very firm about how we couldn't have it at the GSU, which I still think was a little unfair, but we compromised, and they found another venue, the Track and Tennis Center, and the school really did a good job with making sure that it was what we would have been getting at the GSU by, like, accommodating, like, the seats and everything. I guess there's something about the GSU that's really hard to secure, and, like, I do respect, like, BUPD's, like, professional opinion on that, so we were able to compromise it. But then on the other hand, why it took so long is because YAF and the Daily Wire, when they chose us out of all the schools that applied, they had agreed to the GSU, so they had to reevaluate this new venue. So that's kind of why it took so long.
Got it. And do you know the occupancy of the Track and Tennis Center?
For the event, there will be 1,500 people.
So that is about the same as what you would have had in Metcalf.
Exactly. Yes, they did exactly. They did a good job with making sure it would be pretty much the same.
Got it. So what level of security do you guys think is appropriate for this event? Did you see that security quote, even if the university was paying for it, as too much or excessive?
I mean, in an ideal world, obviously, no security would be needed, but we do not live in an ideal world. We live in a world where there are actual threats and, you know, from other groups. So, I mean, at this point, we know that Antifa is going to probably be a presence, but I really can't say as to how much of a security presence there should be, but because BUPD is probably way better at assessing that threat level than me. So I'm going to say whatever BUPD thinks is enough to keep everybody in that room safe and to keep Ben Shapiro safe, then I think that's how much should be there.
Yeah, so we do really respect BUPD's professional opinion, and I know that they have intel that we don't have. And the FBI actually arrested someone who threatened to kill Ben, so like there's a lot of attacks on his life too. He has 24/7 like personal security. So like we don't like disagree with the quote per se. Like that's totally a professional opinion, and we respect them. Like we're not gonna like claim to be security experts.
Yeah,
but we will say that it's like really, really sad that that's the state of affairs we're in, where like you need that much security for like someone talking for an hour. I can tell you that if someone of the same magnitude on the left came anywhere in America, like there wouldn't be that security needed on any campus, because conservatives simply are not like that. Conservatives will go to the event, ask questions, and that's it. Like they would never threaten anything.
Diana, you told the Daily Wire in that September 18th article that amount of security only encourages leftist agitators. Do you still stand by that?
Oh, absolutely. That was the whole point of like why it was ridiculous, because I was saying before, Antifa gets without even doing anything, like threatening anything. The school preemptively said they're known to do this, like they're winning, like you're getting this fee. So it incentivizes them, because they're taught that, okay, if we keep threatening violence, they'll keep slapping conservative groups with huge fees, and then they'll have a really hard time having the event. So it incentivizes them to do it. And then on the other hand, we go to events and we're not like that, and we're on good behavior. And I'm not saying like we deserve like a trophy for that, but like it's not incentivized, that behavior.
Mm-hmm. So there's criticism that Boston University takes in tuition dollars, and it's now paying out this almost $13,000 for security. And for some people, they find that really disturbing, that their money could be going towards this event, especially for somebody who might be part of a group like the transgender community that feels targeted by Ben Shapiro. So how do you respond to that criticism?
Well, first, I don't think that Ben Shapiro even targets transgender people, because also
He calls them mentally ill.
Yeah, but that's not violence. That's the thing. That's an opinion. And you can hold these opinions, and that's not going to physically harm you. So that's not an actual threat.
What he says is that gender dysphoria is in the DSM-5, which is true.
Which is a fact.
Like, we can't have honest conversations about things if we can't state things that's a fact. We can't.
Okay.
You still want to talk about that?
I do want to stick on the topic of student opposition. And I was wondering, have either of you personally interacted with anyone from Students Against Hate Speech? Or have you personally confronted these kinds of complaints?
We've tried to talk. They're not really open to talking. They don't want to have a dialogue at all. They just want to shut it down, at least from everybody that I've met with.
Yeah, at the protest the other day.
Or attempted to meet with.
And you're talking about the sit-in on March
Plaza? Yeah, the sit-in. I wasn't there because I had to, I had important things to do and had to, get the event confirmed still. And I wasn't really, I didn't see it as something being super productive. But some people went, and my members were called ugly by them. They were called, they were told to suck their you-know-what. And then they were chanted at and all this stuff. And people have been posting memes about, throwing milkshakes at us. So
but you would want to speak to them?
Yes, of course.
What do you mean? Like, well, so, about so, political issues.
Yeah, so it sounds like obviously. You said you've reached out to them at these protests they haven't wanted to speak.
They do not want to engage at all. As a matter of fact, they want to shut down engagement, which is what they're trying to do right now by trying to shut down this event. They don't want it. They want to shut down debate and discourse.
Have you tried to reach out to them outside of protests, or is it only at these in-person events?
So wait, what are you like? Are you suggesting we have like a debate with them?
I'm not suggesting anything. I'm just trying to get a sense of what your interaction with them has been like and what you would like to have.
Well, we did talk to them at Splash at the beginning of the year. Why DSA specifically? Now Students Against Hate Speech, and we like, hey, we'd love to have a debate sometime. And,
yeah, we
and they're like, well, okay, well, we'll get back to you about that, and they haven't gotten back to us about that. But outside of that, I mean, I think that's really the only interaction that I've really had with them.
It's also just, we talk to liberals all the time, like, especially like at our meetings, like a lot of people are liberal or like not even conservative. But when people are, when like Students Against Hate Speech say things like Ben Shapiro advocates for genocide,
ethnic cleansing,
it's really hard to debate people that are like that far off. And when they call you, and when they water down terms, like calling me sexist and like saying I hate myself, it's calling our members homophobic when our previous president is gay and we have many LGBT members, like, and like calling us racist when we have people from all different countries and backgrounds, it's just like you can't even talk. Like, there's, where do you even begin where like the gap is that big?
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the protesters mentioning that he advocates for genocide, and that came from the online petition. I want to address one thing that they said on that petition. I'm going to read you a quote from a column Ben Shapiro wrote. Maybe I'm a hard-hearted guy, but when I see in the newspapers that civilians in Afghanistan or the West Bank were killed by American or Israeli troops, I don't really care. In fact, I would rather that the good guys use the Air Force to kill the bad guys, even if that means some civilians get killed along the way. One American soldier is worth far more than an Afghan civilian.
Yeah, so he started talking about, he started being a commentator when he was like 18, and that was from when he was 18, and he's apologized for it and said he misspoke for many times over the last two decades. So like, it's very dishonest when people bring up stuff he's already explained and apologized for when he was a teenager. He also explained that like his, like what he was trying to get at was like, we need to be more cautious about like going into wars, about going into wars and like recognizing like how much things are worth. Like, don't you, wait, hold on. We actually have like his exact response to this.
Sure.
There's a huge article that I've directed many people to about all his tweets, because people love citing his tweets and never read, like, out of context.
And his articles.
And never watching, like, full videos of him.
Are you talking about all the dumb stuff I've ever done?
I'm
yes,
on that
great
page
article.
Right now,
so
yes.
Do you want to read the part about that tweet exactly? Could
yes, okay. So he, so about the column that you just cited, the enemy civilian casualties column, he says, quote, in this column written when I was 18, I suggested that civilian casualties in war were of no concern. While the larger point of the piece, that we must calculate the risk to American service members when we design the rules of engagement, is partially correct. The piece is expressed in the worst way possible and simplifies the issue beyond the bounds of morality, particularly by doubting the civilian status of some civilians. It's just a bad piece, plain and simple, something I wish I'd never written. It's also good evidence that a lot of stuff you think is smart at 18 is just you being an idiot at 18, unquote.
I mean, those are pretty harsh words.
Yes, and he's apologized for them. Your views can change over time. You can realize that you said dumb stuff. So I would hope that people would be willing to give the same forgiveness for things or dumb things that they have said in the past. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because you change as you move, as you get older and your opinions evolve.
Let's turn back to something that he hasn't taken back. I want to jump back to his comments on the transgender community, calling people who are transgender delusional, saying they have a mental illness. Students Against Hate Speech says that if BU cared about being a diverse and welcoming campus, they wouldn't allow someone who says that to come here.
So we were actually talking about this in our last meeting a lot, because
we
were talking about the James Younger case of that kid, but we don't have to get into that case. But we were talking about how saying someone has a mental illness is not an insult at all.
Some people perceive it as an insult.
Yeah, but that says more about them than us.
It says that they view,
like,
mental illness
that says
as a
they
stigma,
view it as
a negative
that, that
thing.
Means they view it as an insult. It's not an insult. That's like, that says more about the person who's interpreting it as an insult. Like, Ben isn't saying it as an insult or like, oh, target this person.
No, he's
mental
trying, he's not trying to be derogatory.
Yeah, many people have mental illnesses, and we take that very seriously. But like, it's not an insult to say someone has a mental illness. It's just talking about like why things are happening. And like, it is a fact that gender dysphoria is in the DSM-5. That's what he says when he says it's like a fact.
It's the same thing as when you call somebody somebody who is a schizophrenic, and you say that you are a schizophrenic. That's not insulting them. That's saying, I mean, it's what they're, it's real to them. So I would say that's actually more legitimizing the transgender position, in my opinion.
What do the two of you hope happens on November 13th?
Ooh. Well, I know what I want to happen. I've said that every like interview I've done, I always say, I want people who disagree with him to come to it. People who disagree with him who are like normal, like capable of being civil and like not throwing stuff. Yeah, like people, yes, you should come. There's a Q&A session. I also heard people saying like, oh, like I bet the school like required them to have the Q&A session. No, there's always a Q&A session open to anyone, and people who disagree with Ben go first. So he, like, all these people saying that, like, he doesn't want to have a dialogue, it's just completely, patently false.
Yeah, absolutely. We hope we have a great event. We hope that a lot of people disagree, come out and have a civil debate. That's all we really want.
Diana, Nick, thank you for your time today.
It's been a pleasure.
That's my interview with Young Americans for Freedom. Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Grace Ferguson, and this is the Common Thread Podcast.